The past few days, Iowans have evacuated homes, filled sandbags, and prayed to avoid a disastrous summer as rivers, creeks, and waterways come out of their banks. Are we out of danger now? This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. After a break from the steady diet of heavy rainstorms, water levels in many rivers and streams fell on the weekend. Is the worst flooding this spring over? Well, officials remain cautious. We'll find out why. We'll also hear stories this hour from communities affected by this, the wettest spring on record, and get a big picture look at what's happening across the state and what's to come from Iowa flood experts. How's flooding affected you? Join our conversation after this news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, in the past few days, Iowans have evacuated homes. They've been filling sandbags and also praying to avoid a disastrous summer. Our rivers, creeks, waterways, some of them surging out of their banks. But we've had a weekend of relatively calm, nice weather without much rain at all in most of the state. Are we out of danger now? Well, that's one of the questions we'll be asking this hour as we get a flood update. After this steady diet of rainstorms over the past few weeks, water levels in many rivers and streams fell over the weekend. A number of guests here, and we want to check in with you as well. Has the spring flooding affected you? We want to hear from you this hour. 1-866-780-9100. Are you on this sunny Monday breathing a sigh of relief, cautious though it may be? Tell us what flooding looks like in your area. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org is our email. You can also post on our Facebook or tweet us at IPR Talk. Joining us first of all by phone from the National Weather Service, Maren Stofflett is a service hydrologist in the Quad Cities with the National Weather Service. Hi, Maren. Welcome back.
Hello. Thank you.
Quickly, we want to touch bases with you several times during the hour, but up front, can you give us a big picture of the flooding in the state after this break from a long stretch of weeks and weeks of storms?
Right. As we here enter the first week in June, we're closing out the meteorological spring, and we've had an extremely wet spring. Across the state of Iowa, it stacks up to be the wettest spring on record. So that, of course, has caused flooding and several different rounds for different parts of the state, but generally over eastern Iowa, we're still experiencing many rivers that have moderate to major flooding ongoing, and some that are still rising a bit before hopefully they'll fall later this week.
Mm-hmm. What have the last few days of little rain or no rain done for the picture?
We've had active weather across the Midwest here late last week into the weekend, but thank goodness it's not been right across parts of Iowa. So giving us a little bit of a break anyway, mm-hmm. and that's helped. I mean, we still see rises in response to the heavy rainfall we had during the later part of May, but at least we had a little bit of time to not have additional rises because of any additional rainfall.
Okay, Maren Stofflett, stand by. Dean Borg is with us of Iowa Public Radio. Good afternoon to you, Dean.
Hello, Ben.
You've been out covering. We've been listening to your reports from many parts of the state. Let's talk about a few points that you can add to our discussion. This morning, I understand you talked with the operations manager of Coralville Lake in eastern Iowa, Dee Goldman. What did you find out?
Yes, I talked with Dee Goldman. He is smiling today because the Army Corps of Engineers has revised downward, and he said, "What a difference 2 days, just two sunny days over the weekend with no rain made," because they were able to, the Army Corps, able to revise downward their forecast that water would in that reservoir would begin uncontrollably begin coming over the spillway this week. Now, they're forecasting, because of the sunny, rainless weekend, that will crest at 710 feet tomorrow, and that's 2 feet under the spillway. So that means they can maintain control of the outflow coming out of that dam, and that's good news downriver for Coralville, the University of Iowa, and the city of Iowa City.
Now, this is a real surprise. At the end of last week, we were I was the reports I were hearing was a near certainty. It was not if, it was a when, was it not?
Yes, yes. That's why it's so surprising. And I think that Mr. Goldman was even surprised.
Mm-hmm. So when that uncontrollable flow goes over the spillway,
yes,
that has potential damage for Iowa City, which had extensive damage in 2008, other communities downstream.
And that's what happened in 2008, because the water was coming uncontrollably. The Army Corps had lost control of the reservoir, and Iowa City paid the price.
Mm-hmm.
Ben, they're closing. It's really surreal to be out there, and yesterday being sunny and people wanted to get out of their homes, they had unprecedented visitors out there at the dam, and I saw photos and video of people crawling up the spillway and just playing on there, and I just went in the prospect of such impending danger, and here we have human beings crawling on that structure. And so the Army Corps of Engineers even had a small accident out there yesterday, Mr. Goldman told me. Two vehicles collided because of the big crowds and traffic. So they're closing that public access to the dam at 10 o'clock tonight.
Dean, you've also been traveling to the mid and western part of the state, or to the mid part of the state, and observing some rivers along the way. What have you seen?
Well, as I travel in the Highway 30 area, it's especially noticeable just west of Tama in the vicinity. This is the Iowa River in the vicinity of the Meskwaki Casino. Between Tama and Marshalltown. That Iowa River in that area is about 3/4 mile wide and has inundated some housing and some farm implement tractors sitting there up to the engine in water.
Mm-hmm.
It just came up too fast, I guess, for them to get that tractor out of there. But it's especially bad flooding there, and the Skunk River along I-80 in the Newton area.
Well, what did that look like?
That is lots of farm fields inundated there.
Okay.
In northern Iowa, Ben, also talking about being farmland underwater, I talked with a farmer up in Winnebago County. Now, that's an area that we don't pay too much attention to. We haven't heard much about it. But along the Minnesota border, about 3 or 4 counties there are really in bad shape. I talked to one farmer who has 4,000 acres and about 500 acres underwater.
Okay. And I understand you also talked with a number of University of Iowa officials. Of course, the University of Iowa hit hard in 2008, and the preparedness is completely different than it was in 2008.
We really learned, didn't we, from 2008. You can see it and what the University of Iowa and the City of Iowa City and other communities are doing this time, including Cedar Rapids. But University of Iowa, yes, big steel fortresses erected in front of the art building in the Hancher vicinity along the Iowa River there, that art building, which was flooded last time around. And then in front of the Mayflower Dormitory, of course, Dubuque Street, even in the heavy rain, they closed traffic there. And, of course, that is closed right now. But the Mayflower Dormitory has a huge, I would say, 8-foot-high walls of sand about 3 feet thick there.
Mm-hmm. Any estimate? Hopefully this is the high point of the spring flooding, but do we have any early estimates of damage already done?
Yes. I was told by Johnson County Emergency Management that we already in Johnson County have experienced about $2 million, they estimate, of damage with about, I think it was about 24, if I remember right, structures that are either underwater right now or about to be flooded.
Okay. Dean Borg, stay with us, please. Thank you in the meantime for those observations, that information, a flood update on River to River from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Ben Kiefer, and if you have something to chip in your area, has the spring flooding affected you? Are you breathing a cautious sigh of relief? Tell us what it looks like in your part of the state. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. Post something on our Facebook page or tweet us at IPR Talk. Joining us now, Mitch Nordmeyer. He is the belongs to the Butler County Emergency Management. Mitch Nordmeyer, are you on the phone with us?
Yes, I am, Ben.
Okay, we're looking up to north central Iowa, up there in the Butler, Bramer, Blackhawk County area. What are you experiencing?
Well, last week, we have torrential rains just like a lot of the other parts of the state did. But then it traveled to our north, and like you mentioned, Winnebago County, Mitchell County, Floyd County. So a lot of that water flows to the south through us. Specifically, the city of New Hartford went into emergency mode on first time last Sunday with torrential rains off to our west, and that's where their Beaver Creek picks up their watershed. So we experienced a lot of water here in the southern part of Butler County.
Mm-hmm. How many? Can you give us an idea of how many structures, homes, and other structures might be affected?
Well, to start with, we had around 25 or 27 of our secondary roads that went underwater and were pretty much underwater all week. So our county engineer is going to be assessing that damage. We had some homes, roughly 10 or 12 homes in the rural area that are close to waterways that had water around them. And then the fight in New Hartford was pretty much twofold. They battled Monday against rising flood water. Water receded, and then Wednesday afternoon and Thursday, they fought it all over for a second time.
Mm-hmm.
There's probably 8 or 10 homes in the town that actually got water around them, but biggest thing was all the sandbagging, all the mitigation efforts that they went to.
Mm-hmm. Dean Borg was telling us about the great difference between 2013 and 2008. Is it similar there in your county? I don't know if you were also in your position there in 2008. Are you better prepared this time around?
Oh, absolutely. I think the city officials in New Hartford will tell you they added on to their levee system that goes around the community, and they extended one out further to the north.
Mm-hmm.
Had they not taken that mitigation effort, we definitely would have had some pretty serious water in town this whole week. So we're a lot better off at making advanced notification to the people. You know, we take everything seriously. We're not waiting to see what everybody's talking about at the coffee shop. We're making notifications sooner, and the mitigation efforts that everybody has taken are really starting to pay off.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like we have a sunny Monday across the state. Lends us to even make us perhaps more optimistic. Do you share the optimistic view, or how are we beginning to see the light, or are you going to be not quite on board with that optimism yet?
I will share in that optimism, although I am cautiously optimistic. The water levels have gone down a great deal, but the ground is still completely saturated with water. And another 2 or 3 inch rain around here will just about put us right back where we were last week. So it's great to see the sunshine. I love it. Mm-hmm. But I'm still not ready to completely jump for joy just yet.
Okay. Are people getting out and thinking this is over, perhaps wanting to clean up yet?
You know, I think that's part of the preparation for letting them know what's going on. A lot of people are talking about it. They're talking about maybe removing sandbags from here or there, but then they've heard the weather forecast for tonight and tomorrow, and they're, well, maybe we'll just leave them in place, you know. Nobody wants to go through all that work again. So we're going to wait and see what this next round of thunderstorms brings.
Okay, we'll hope for the best. Thank you for the update from Butler County, Mitch Nordmeyer of the County Emergency Management there. Thank you, Mitch.
Thanks, Ben.
This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and we're getting a flood update. Larry Weber is with us in the Iowa City studio. He's a co-founder of the Iowa Flood Center, also director of the Iowa Institute of Hydraulic Research, the IIHR. Larry, welcome to our program.
Thanks, Ben.
You've been listening to what we've been saying here, where we sit now in terms of flooding for the spring 2013. You have been involved in helping out communities with resources. How?
Well, we're providing information, and this is information that didn't exist in 2008. We have community-centric maps that provide the extents of inundation in the major urban areas in Iowa as it relates to various gauge reading and river flow readings. Mm-hmm. And that information has been tremendously valuable to cities, counties, response planners, as well as individual home and business owners.
Mm-hmm. So people compared to a few years ago can get higher resolution look at what's happening and in a more detailed fashion in a localized area?
Yeah, that's correct. So in 2008, the only reference that most folks had was the 1993 event, and they knew where the water level came to in 1993. They may have planned for that elevation. Today we can tell them for the gauge reading in Iowa City or Cedar Rapids as an example, for every 6-inch rise in the gauge, exactly what that means in terms of inundation for their neighborhood.
Okay. When you look forward, what do you see right now? Where is your optimism on the scale, cautious or otherwise?
Well, I think I would agree with the other participants this morning. I mean, we're all very cautiously optimistic. We have a little different situation in the Iowa River Basin. We're afforded the protections of the Coralville Reservoir and the attenuation of the peak flow that we've seen, perhaps as much as 40,000 CFS coming into the reservoir, only going to peak at about 20,000 coming out.
CFS, cubic feet per second.
That's correct.
If you've never stood there and watched that flow through, it is quite a sight. You understand the power of water here too. So is this the only part of the state that has that sort of hand of man to help control floods?
No, we have other reservoirs in the state, Red Rock, Sailorville, Rathbun, as examples. And the great benefit is that we're seeing about one half of the flow rate in Iowa City that we saw in the Iowa River up by Marengo. On the other side of that equation, though, is we have a tremendous amount of water stored in the reservoir. And so our flood will be a very long wave flood. It will take maybe 7 to 10 days for us to get through this crest. And so
even if there are no more significant rainfalls, you have a lot to get rid of.
That's correct. We have a lot of water to move out of the system. And so we'll be very mindful of the weather for the next 2 weeks or more.
Okay, stay with us, please, Larry Weber. Hal Pryor is with us. He's a Columbus Junction City Council member joining us by phone. Hi, Hal Pryor, as we jump around the state trying to get a feeling for what it looks like. What about there in Columbus Junction to the south, Hal Pryor? Tell us
Hello,
the situation.
Ben.
Hi, how are you?
Well, we started very proactively looking at this about 10 days ago. After the 2008 flood, we did a lot of documentation. We did a lot of surveying and determination of where the flood levels were in 2008, and we had a lot of lessons learned from 2008 that we have access to. And so we started about 10 days ago looking at the forecast that said we went to 32.3 in 2008, but we saw a forecast that said we might get to 29 something this time. So we actually raised our protection levees by temporarily for about 4 feet. We filled 3,000 sandbags about a week ago with another 10,000 on hand if we need. We've stockpiled all the materials we needed to close Highway 92 if it came over Highway 92. We really started out looking at an event that we thought we wanted to look at worst case and hope it didn't get to there. And it looks like now our situation currently is that it might end up being a non-event almost, but that's good. We think our level here is, of course, is affected. It's a little bit different than other areas because we are affected by both the Iowa and the Cedar. We're only about a mile below the confluence of the Iowa and the Cedar.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we get what happened in 2008, we actually had cresting on both rivers at the same time almost. This year, the Cedar is cresting. It's cresting 2 or 3 days ahead of what the Iowa is going to crest for us. So the Cedar is actually dropping, and the Iowa is kind of stabilized right now. The Coralville is controlling theirs, so we have a control mount coming downstream on us now. And looking right now, our river level is pretty stable, and our forecast is dropping. Our forecast right now is for about 25.6 was the latest forecast, and that doesn't even, our old levees, that really is a non-event. We actually had a river levels higher back in April than what 25.6 would be, so we may not reach the level we reached back in April. And back in April, no one was even concerned about or even thought about it.
Mm-hmm. We're hoping
it's going to be a non-event.
We hope so too, Hal Pryor. What lessons have you learned from 2008 that helped out this time?
Yeah, the big things, we learned a lot of things about. We have certain areas that we knew we were vulnerable to. We have a railroad track to the north that we had, we didn't think about that when it got up to the top, near the railroad track. That's our highest point, of course, around the levee, but that we had seepage through the ballast. We've now added, we have a couple more pumps, 6-inch pumps that we can use. We found better ways to close off Highway 92. back in 2008, we tried to build a huge sand levee all the way up Highway 92, and that failed on us. But we now have there are better ways to close off 92. We can use the HESCO barriers, which we're looking at purchasing, although this time we had a process where we have what we call large sandbags. They're basically 3x3 sandbags, and we have a local source of sand within about a quarter mile of the levee. And we can fill those 3x3 sandbags and stack those with concrete barriers behind them and in front of them. We just learned there's a lot of ways to do it. And we went in and did a really accurate survey of where our flood level was in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
So we know pretty accurately now that if we get a certain level of flood that comes in, we know where it's going to go to. Yeah.
Did you more efficiently mobilize the population ready to volunteer?
On this time?
Yes.
No, because, well, we have a system to mobilize them, but we had fantastic support. We put out, back in 2008, we put out a code red call one morning, and we're a small town. We put out a code red call at about 4 o'clock in the morning, and by 8 o'clock in the morning, we had almost 300 people.
Right, and what I'm getting at, Hal, is that there were plenty of people also in 2008 willing to volunteer to come down, but then emergency services people didn't have the way to process them and put them to work efficiently and quickly. I guess that's what I was driving at.
Okay. Yeah, I think we have learned a lot about that. We have systems of sand where you can sandbag. We can operate a dozen or 15 stations at a time. And answer your question, yes, we're a lot more efficient now because we found out the things that didn't work well in 2008 and we changed them.
you mentioned something there, Hal, the HESCO barrier. What is that?
It's a HESCO barrier. I don't know. You've probably seen them some on the TV. I know they use them in the Quad Cities. It looks like it's a big box that basically will fold up. And they're about 4x4 by 4x8 by 4. They're pretty good sized boxes. And they fold up. You can store them. You fold them up and you fill them with sand and they're stackable. You can double wide them or stack them, I think. And if you've seen some of these places, I know some of the larger cities use them now. It looks like a large metal or kind of plastic barrier or whatever the material is made of, and they fold up and you fill them with sand and stack them up as opposed to putting sandbags.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I call it HESCO, I guess, is a brand name, and I'm sure there's probably others that happen. But we were doing a similar thing by using what we call 3x3-foot sandbags, which were large sandbags, but it'd be nice to have, and we're looking at probably purchasing some of the HESCOs where you can store them, and when you need them, you pull them out and you set them up, and they're great for places where you need, I think they've used them in Iowa City around the university in some areas.
Okay. Hal, thank you very much for the sunny outlook, not only in our skies, but also on the ground there with your rivers.
One last comment.
Very quickly. We're coming up on a break.
Mm-hmm. We are still not going to quit looking until mid-June because we had a flood on the 14th of June the last time, so we're going to watch it.
Okay. We'll keep our fingers crossed all around. Hal Pryor, a Columbus Junction City Council member, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And we're going to go to a break in just a moment. Maren Stofflett is with us of the National Weather Service hydrologist there. When we come back, I'd like to ask you about what we can look forward to in the next few days. Maren, you're still there?
Yes, I am.
Want to ask Maren about what could happen in the next few days. Best case, worst case scenario. We're getting a flood update on this sunny Monday morning after a weekend with not much precipitation, thank goodness. How is the spring flooding affecting you? Have you been affected by it? Are you breathing a cautious sigh of relief? Are you not quite ready to do that? 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Dean Borg has been with us. Thank you for being with us, Dean. I think you're sticking around for a little while. Larry Weber of the Iowa Flood Center is with us as well. We hope you'll join our conversation. Tell us what it looks like in your part of Iowa, as we hope we've seen the high point in terms of spring flooding. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. Back in just a minute.
Support comes from the College Hill Arts Festival, June 14th to 15th on the UNI campus in Cedar Falls, featuring 75 artists, plus music and more. Artists, schedule, and more is at collegehillartsfestival.com.
Back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. Thank you for joining us over the noon hour. I'm Ben Kiefer. Breathing a cautious sigh of relief, sunny skies overhead, dry weather the last couple of days. across the state, and it's improving our view of what we thought was at the end of the next week, perhaps the beginning of a disastrous summer, harkening back to 2008. Fortunately, our situation has improved since then, and also our preparation for the worst-case scenario seeming to have improved as we sort of get the picture from around the state with a number of people, our guests. We have Larry Weber here with the Iowa Flood Center, talking also with Dean Borg of Iowa Public Radio, who's been doing extensive reporting on flooding across the state. And Maren Stofflet is with us of the National Weather Service, a hydrologist based in the Quad Cities. Maren, let me start with you. Getting a good feeling as we check in with various places around the state. But from here on out, as a hydrologist, can you tell us what variables are you looking for in the next few days, even weeks, that will make a difference and turn this into a best-case scenario from here on out or a worst-case scenario?
Well, you know, even as we still have some crests to experience on some of the rivers, just with the rain that has already fallen, the ground around the state is very wet and in parts extremely wet. So, of course, any rainfall is going to run off more quickly than say, last year when we were experiencing drought. So we're very in tune to the forecast precipitation amounts, and that's what we're kind of looking at. Here in the next few days, we're looking at a weather system that does look a little bit different than those we've seen here over the last couple of weeks.
So we're out of some kind of rut that we had these continual storms churning through, right?
Or at least kind of a temporary break, maybe.
Okay.
Is a better way to look at it.
Yeah, tell us what changed.
With this next system coming in, it just doesn't have the extent of moisture, and we're not looking at so many days of very heavy rainfall like we had, you know, several rounds of here from April through May. So this next round of looking at amounts more on the order of like a quarter to maybe three quarters of an inch over a lot of the area.
Mm-hmm.
So hoping for not the 2 to 3 inch amounts that we've been seeing with some of these storms that have sort of been the typical reports we've had, and some much higher.
Mm-hmm. Is something fundamentally changed so that you could say that the summer itself looks better than it did last week or the last few weeks?
I'm a little bit hesitant because we're looking later this weekend at yet another system to come in that looks like it may bring another threat of heavy rain. So I guess we just kind of have to take it a week at a time and, you know, of course, where exactly that rain falls, you know, across what river basins, that makes a big difference, too.
Okay, Maren Stofflet with the National Weather Service. You have questions or comments, 1-866-780-9100. You can tell us how the spring flooding has affected you. Hopefully we've seen the high point. You can also post on our Facebook page or give us a tweet at IPR Talk. Adam on our Twitter in Iowa City, Adam says, no immediate impact for me other than traffic rerouting, North Dubuque being shut in Iowa City. Good teaching moments with my son about flooding history from 2008, tweets Adam. And it is apparently a teaching moment for all of us as we consider, and we've just heard the governor there talk about strides in improvement in preparation for floods. And when we, Larry Weber of the Iowa Flood Center, you've been talking about the strides here too, and you're talking about, you want to talk about strides into the future too. We've got to keep on.
Well, that's right. We've got to keep on working, and I think that's the biggest change that we saw in 08 was the recognition that you know, future floods will happen. The formation of the Flood Center and funding that's been directed to our center, in addition to mathematical models and inundation maps, we're also looking at how to make Iowa a more resilient state to flooding.
Mm-hmm.
How can we bring some of the landforms, the valleys and the draws out in our agricultural lands into use for holding water back during these events?
Mm-hmm. So tell me specifically, what does that mean?
Well, we have a great example down in southern Iowa, a small basin called Soap Creek, where they've installed 132 farm ponds and wetlands in their watershed, each one of them to provide local value of reducing secondary roads infrastructure. But collectively in that watershed, we're seeing for 100-year precipitations, reductions of stream flow by 40%. And 40% is very significant.
Okay, very good. Does this also have to do with, you know, the way we've been paving over a lot of our landscape, and that funnels the water ever so quickly into our rivers? Can we do anything there?
Well, we've certainly altered our landscape, both in the urban areas as well as the agricultural areas. We've seen the community of West Union step forward with a wonderful stormwater management program there, installing permeable pavers and other infiltration practices to try to reduce the impact of one community on the watershed.
Dean Borg, do you want to jump in?
I'm interested in your line of questioning because I can remember over the past decades never covering big river flooding like the Cedar and the Iowa, maybe ice jams and maybe flooding along the Mississippi. But the Iowa City flooding a few decades ago was confined mostly to flash flooding along what they called Dry Run Creek. Now we don't hear anything more about Dry Run Creek because of abatement and control measures that have eliminated that. Now we get the big river flooding. Larry.
That's right. And I think part of that has to do with changes in precipitation patterns that we're seeing, changes in land use both on the positive side, as you've mentioned in Dry Run Creek and other watersheds, and on the negative side where, you know, we've seen agricultural practices pushing out towards the stream banks and, you know, out towards the fence lines as the commodity prices continue to force agriculture to this more active state.
So how does the Iowa Flood Center specifically work and target agricultural and rural areas?
Well, we've been working hand-in-hand with agriculture in this, and again, a lot of it is in awareness. One of the products that we're producing are updated inundation maps for the entire state, and that includes every waterway that drains an area greater than 1 square mile. So the advantage there is a producer could look, and rather than enrolling a full 40-acre or 80-acre tract of land into a conservation program, now they can target areas that see more frequent flooding, and we can give them that, you know, that area of inundation. So if it's a buffer strip or a CRP or CSP program, let's try to enroll that land that gets flooded more frequently.
Larry Weber is co-founder of the Iowa Flood Center, and we want to have another guest join us. Jim Fawcett is with us, joining us by phone of Iowa State University Extension, an agronomist there. Jim Fawcett, welcome to our program.
Thank you.
Well, as we're talking about agriculture here, let us have you tell us, please, where is flooding most affecting farmers in the state?
Well, I think you name a river, and there's flooding there. That's where a lot of the flooding that's occurring over a long period of time is. But there's been a lot of flash floods as well. So anyone that has fields along streams and creeks, chances are the stream went out of its bank and at least we had some flooding for a short period of time.
Mm-hmm. What can we do about it in the short term and in the long term? What can farmers do?
Well, one good thing we had going for us is the cooler temperatures means that the crops can survive a little longer underwater. So I think in those areas where there was a flash flooding, as long as the crop wasn't underwater for more than 2 or 3 days, a good chance that they're going to survive that. So when we have temperatures in the 80s, that's when a day or so is about all the crop can survive. So mm-hmm. So we're hopeful that those there'll be a lot of fields where the crop will survive. But along the major rivers where it's going to take several days for the water to recede, then it's a matter of replanting, and hopefully there'll still be time to replant something. I think in some cases we may not be able to get a crop in there.
Is there an outside date you can say when replanting just doesn't make sense?
Well, for replanting corn, you really don't like to have to be planting corn later than about June 10th to 15th. And even then, we're looking at maybe only half of a normal yield of corn planted that late. And so at that date is when you'd really like to be switching to soybeans, if that's an option. Problem is that a lot of corn fields, they may have already had their herbicides applied, and most corn herbicide labels don't allow for replanting soybeans for a good reason. The soybeans may not survive. And so we may just be stuck with corn. You can plant corn as late as late June, but it just gets very risky as if we happen to have an early frost, then it may not make it.
Can you comment on how much of a financial problem impact this is when farmers have to replant? What does that mean for a small business person?
Well, when you're looking at corn, corn yields are much lower when planted in June versus early May, and so you may be looking at only half the normal corn yield, and when you're looking at corn prices today, that's a huge amount of money that we're talking about. So one thing is farmers need to be contacting their insurance people and, you know, seeing what some of their options are. In some cases, there's just not going to be a crop planted at all in some of these fields.
Mm-hmm. Jim Fawcett of ISU Extension, you've been getting out to survey some of these areas. Can you tell us about a couple places you've seen or one?
Oh, well, I actually live right on the Coralville Reservoir, so I'm familiar with what's going on in that area, and there are fields there that that are underwater. And of course, the Iowa River downstream and the Cedar River south of Cedar Rapids, there are fields that are flooded there.
Okay, do you have reflections on how this compares with 2008?
Fortunately, they're hoping that the water is not going to go over the spillway on the reservoir. For a time there, they were thinking it might be a foot and a half over the spillway. Which
for now, it looks like we've got a nice surprise on this Monday, doesn't it?
Yeah. So that was nice. But of course, they've got the floodgates totally opened now, so there is a lot of extensive flooding going on in Iowa City.
Do we have anything we have to, as far as farmers, as drought relief? We were talking about drought for so long until very recently. Any considerations there? Any sort of reminders?
Well, the main thing with the floods now is insurance, is to see what your insurance options are, because a lot of people, particularly in northern Iowa, where there's a lot of corn that hasn't even been planted yet, they're looking at the prevented planting option, where you can get an insurance payment and you don't even plant a crop. So I think that's the main thing is to. If you've got crop insurance, be checking to see what your options are for either replanting or maybe not planting at all.
Mm-hmm. Jim Fawcett with Iowa State University Extension and agronomist, thank you for joining us.
Okay, thank you.
This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. We've been taking the hour to survey where our floods are, the flooding in various parts of the state, minimal at this point, certainly not minimal if it's in your basement, but we were looking at worst-case scenarios at the end of last week. It looked grim indeed, and now we're getting some good news along with some drier weather. Tell us what's going on where you are, how the flooding is affecting you, or what your thoughts are now that we've had some dry days. 1-866-780-9100, River to River at iowapublicradio.org. Sarah on Twitter from Grinnell says, this is the first floor of our house in Oakland Acres is flooded. Sorry to hear about that, Sarah, and hope that cleanup goes well. Tell us, Maren Stofflet, this flooding comes on the heels of a drought. We were worried that would last for years. Are we completely done with the drought? Is that what this means? The pendulum just swings all the way to the other side? Or is it more complicated than that?
Well, we've had a wet pattern here for the last several months. So, you know, we didn't just, you know, flip the switch and the drought was gone. It took a little while to recover from that. But unfortunately, it happened over the course of a few months rather than drawn out longer than that. And that's why we see those flood responses now. But for almost the entire state, we're no longer under a drought classification. On the far western edge of Iowa and northwest edge, there's some dryness there. But other than that, you know, the rest of the state, again, we've recovered but kind of gone the opposite way now this spring with much more moisture than normal.
Dean Borg of Iowa Public Radio, you, of course, covered the massive flooding that happened in eastern Iowa in 2008, especially there, too. And I know you got to know some of the communities.
Yes.
One of the communities that I hope you'll tell us about is a community that the community of Chelsea that experienced in a big way was what nearly wiped off the map in 2008.
You know, Chelsea, Ben, as you recall, is a small community near Tama. It's in the Belle Plaine, Tama, along just south of Highway 30, if you can picture that. And in 2008, they were completely inundated, but along with many other communities. But FEMA picked them out and said, you are in a low-lying area that is going to be so prone to flooding, we will pay you just to abandon this community. We'll move everybody out of here to higher ground. But people had pride in that community and its location, and they said, most of them said, no, we're going to stay here. So now they're flooded again, but they aren't complaining. I heard and talked with one woman who was just waiting for a boat to come and get her at her house, okay, which they have built on. Many of the houses there now are elevated, and the water wasn't in her home yet. and still isn't. And she was just waiting for a boat to come and get her so she can go to work.
What a nice little anecdote there, Dean Borg. Let's go to Suzanne in Grinnell. She dialed 1-866-780-9100, looking around the state for people to give us an idea of how flooding is affecting you. Suzanne, what does it look like in Grinnell, or do you have just a general question?
Well, I guess both. My question was, we actually were, this area was hugely impacted by the flooding. Had a lot more rain than a lot of areas, but and we've seen a lot of soil erosion, a lot of crop ground has washed, and I guess my question is, could the speaker speak to the fact that if things aren't going to get planted because it's too late to plant, what is that going to mean for increased soil erosion around the state?
Let's see if we have some expertise on that. Larry Weber, I know this isn't probably directly. We could have held on to our agronomist. That would have been a good thing, but we don't have Jim Fawcett with us. What can you say, Larry?
Well, it'd be good to circle back with Jim, but there are certainly options for cover crop planting following non-plant decision. So I know that most of the producers and farm managers will be working with the expertise at Iowa State Extension and elsewhere about putting some cover crops on the land.
Dean Borg,
is there any kind of economic inducement for that? I mean, is there any kind of program that would compensate farmers or induce them to do that?
Well, cover crops are an application and a strategy that are being discussed throughout Iowa, both for nutrient reduction as well as soil quality improvement. So there have been a number of incentive programs for cover crops in the past year. I am aware that the legislative leadership had put forward about $20 million in water quality incentives in response to the Iowa nutrient reduction strategy. And so I think there could be some cover crop applications there. But again, I'm not an expert.
And I spoke yesterday with a farm wife, Kathy Ostrander. She's in the Buffalo Center area. And she commented specifically that they had tremendous erosion up there already because of the heavy rains.
Right.
But she said that some of their fields where they were going to plant soybeans this year were left in corn stalks, and that residue helped those fields so their washing wasn't as bad on that corn stalk area where there was residue with minimum tillage.
Suzanne, thank you for your call and your question from Grinnell. She's down 1-866-780-9100. Coming to the end of our hour, I wanted to check in again with our National Weather Service hydrologist, Maren Stofflet. You said, began the show by talking about how this is the wettest spring on record for Iowa, Maren, we had much more severe flooding in 2008. What was the difference?
I think a lot of it's in the timing of the, heavy rainfall events, the timing and exactly where they fall across what specific part of the state. Each event is so very different from the next.
Right.
As much as we might have a very similar rainfall amount, but exactly the timing of when that fell and, what part of the basin was affected.
And isn't it true the winter had a lot to do? We had a lot of snowpack to melt in 2008 that we didn't get this past winter to the extent that we had it in that winter.
That's right. And then in the fall prior to 2008, there was a very wet fall leading into the winter months. And as we talked about last year, we were classified in drought category, and even through the winter, we were experiencing drought across the state. So that the winter we didn't lead into the winter with a wet fall this last year. We had a very dry last year, and so leading in, we were with soil moisture deficits, and you have to take a little bit of time to recover from those to get to the opposite end of being too wet.
Larry Weber, co-founder of the Iowa Flood Center, as we wind up this conversation, what is left to mention from your side?
Well, I think really one of the things to mention is that, floods are with us all the time. So knowing that we're going to have future floods, it's important. And we appreciate the legislature's vision in establishing the Flood Center. The work that we've done over the last 5 years to create create the models, the maps, all the community-based work and meetings to make sure that floods are still present in folks' mind as they plan, I think is really paying dividends for the state. The response by cities, counties, and individuals has been absolutely fantastic this time around, and folks are taking it serious.
So if we take that tweet from Adam in Iowa City, he talked about a good teaching moment with my son about flooding history, even though it looks like we've avoided a lot of the problems this year. Not only a good teaching moment for Adam's son, but a good teaching moment for all of us here in Iowa.
Well, that's right. We've seen deployment of a lot of different flood-related strategies over the last couple weeks, and I think that if we can stay out of harm's way with no precipitation over the next couple days, this will be a good event for many communities in terms of putting those systems in place, making sure they work, and learning from yet another flood in Iowa.
Larry Weber of the Iowa Flood Center, thank you very much for joining us today, for coming into our Iowa City studio. Thank you, Larry.
You bet. Happy to be here.
And, of course, Dean Borg, thank you for being our ears and eyes around the state and recalling some of the information and interesting anecdotes that you found out as we do this flood update. And Maren Stofflett, you're still there with the National Weather Service, service hydrologist. Thank you for joining us for the hour.
Thank you.
And River to River is produced by Ben Stanton, Emily Woodbury, and Sarah Bowden. Technical support from Dennis Reese. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Catherine Perkins. And before I go, I want to check in with Charity Nebbe, who is right next to me. Tomorrow on your program, Talk of Iowa at 10 o'clock, what's coming up?
Well, bands from all over the state of Iowa have been competing in the Iowa Public Radio 8035 play-in. They're competing for a chance to perform on the main stage at the 8035 Music Festival, and it's down to the final three. So the finals are on Thursday of this week, and tomorrow I'll talk with Al Scherz of Iowa Public Radio about the contest, and I'll talk to representatives from the three different bands, Dylan Sires and the Neighbors, Emperor's Club, and Unifonics.
Are they all sort of the same genre, or are they represent different genres? Have you had a listen yet?
I've started listening. They're pretty different styles, so it's going to be a lot of fun.
We'll make sure we want to tune in to Talk of Iowa with Charity Nebbe for some fun with music, some top bands in the area. Thank you, Charity, for that. Our theme music was written and performed by the River Monks. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.